Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time.
The best there is, best there was, and the best there ever will be. And you know it.
With a tear in my eye.
The queen of the crop. Acknowledge me.
Good evening, everybody. It is the last edition of Top Rope Nation for 2025, episode 405. And for the first time in a few weeks, we got all three of us live here on the line, ready to talk all the latest in the world of professional wrestling. We got Justin Joint getting ready to deal some cards for strip poker up there in the top right of your screen. Justin, how are you doing tonight?
I am pretty good. How are you, sir? Have you watched any good football games lately?
I did watch a damn good game on Sunday night. Unfortunately, yeah, the Bears came up short, but that was a hell of a game.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. I can't even really give you crap just because it was such a fun game.
What was it, 38-42?
That sounds right, yep.
You know, I feel like the Bears just ran out of time, honestly. I think Ben Johnson had said he wouldn't have wasted a timeout earlier, and they would have had a couple more shots at the end zone. They ended up 2 yards short in a few seconds, not enough. But man, Niners are an awesome team. Probably two of the top play callers in the NFL. So
yeah,
hopefully more of those in our futures. Awesome game. You got anything in the glass tonight, Justin?
Yeah, I got Adventurous Brewing. Ooh. It is their double IPA. So we should probably get after it. Audacious Culture.
Okay. So I've had a couple of their beers. They're pretty good. Is that Davenport? I'm trying to remember where it's from.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, they make some good stuff. Very nice. Jesse Velasquez, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Ooh, the last hour of my life. I kind of want that back. I would like to go back to what I was doing before I got involved in two separate telephone conversations that made us a little bit late tonight, so I apologize.
Wait, what's going on?
Well, one is for business and the other is for a scared 4.5-year-old right now that we're navigating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hearing things. I think he might be dreaming. Sees Stitch from Lilo and Stitch in his dreams.
Oh man.
I don't think he's ever watched it, but he has a Stitch figure in his room.
Okay. My kids love Lilo and Stitch. I mean, great movie. Oh, the original and then, of course, the new one that came out too. But I love it because of the Elvis connections in that movie. I mean, how can you not like it as an Elvis fan like I am? But yeah, all time classic Lilo and Stitch. Good stuff. You drinking tonight?
I should be after this last hour, but no. I have Athletic Winter Wonder. It's their winter ale.
I just tried that for the first time. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Reasonable.
Good stuff. We got Brittany in the chat checking in. Good to see Brittany as always, one of our most recent patrons. And yeah, I got a drink here. I haven't opened it yet. I was waiting for us getting on the line. It is from Dimensional Brewing out of Dubuque, which is an awesome brewery out of Dubuque, Iowa. This one's called Robot Voice.
Ooh, yeah. Sweet logo.
Yeah, it is a hazy IPA.
Sounds good.
Galaxy Citra, El Dorado hops, 6.6%. It says on the side, must ingest fuel. Robot Voice. So I'm going to crack that open right now and get it poured. But as you guys may have seen here in the podcast description, I don't know if I even ever announced it on the podcast or not, but I did attend AEW World's End. I was trying to keep it under wraps a little bit because I gave the tickets to my two oldest children as a kind of a Christmas gift. And it was like the last gift they opened on Christmas morning. So I printed out the tickets and I put them in an envelope and hid them in the Christmas tree. So they had finished all their gifts And I let him just kind of hang around for a while. And then I was like, hey, is there something in the Christmas tree over there? Yeah. And I'll send you, I'm not going to play it on the show. I'll send you guys the video off air if I haven't already. But when I think I did send it to you, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah. And boy, they were surprised. So we got to go to Chicago just for a quick night, you know, to go to the show. We're going to talk about here in a second. And it was an amazing time, as the AW pay-per-views always are. They had a blast. I was a little nervous coming back because there was a lot of winter weather headed our way. And so we got up at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning and left Chicago at about 6:45 from the hotel. Ended up getting back here to about 11 a.m. And about 10 minutes after I pulled into my garage, the sleet started coming down. So timed it about perfectly. Our buddy Jay Schmitz, he was also at the show, patron of the show. And he left about an hour after us, and they were driving 30 on the interstate because the roads were so bad.
Ugh,
luckily we avoided that. So, but yeah, I mean, it was a very quick trip. This is how quick it was. Jay was staying on the same floor as us at the same hotel. Didn't even plan it. Just a couple doors down. I never even saw him the whole weekend.
What?
Did not see him. Right. We got there. We went to the mall. My youngest and my wife also came, and we took them to the Lego store. So they didn't go to the pay-per-view. She's a little young for that.
Hey.
So they did like Legos and swam in the hotel while we went to the wrestling show. And so we were out, so I didn't see him then. And then by the time we went out to dinner, and by the time we got back, he had already walked to the show. And then when we got back to the hotel after World's End, Jay invited me down to the room for beers. And I was like, dude, I'm already in bed. We're getting up at 6 a.m. You know, I'm leaving early. So I never saw him. And then he messaged me the next morning at like 7 something. And he was hanging out in the lobby, and we were already on the road. I never even saw him in the flesh, even though we were literally on the same floor at the hotel. So, yeah, it was a very quick trip. I was very worried about the weather. But, man, we had a absolute blast at the show. The thumbnail on YouTube, by the way, that is a picture I took at the show, so I got to use an original picture.
Is it the Samoa Joe one?
It is not that. It's MJF the belt. Yeah.
Do you have a new camera on your phone? Because I saw like half of those, and I was just, what in the hell type of camera quality do you have? That's impressive.
I just upgraded my phone, actually, so good timing on that. It's just it's the new iPhone, but yeah, the camera on it is phenomenal. Way better than my old iPhone. So yeah, that definitely made a difference. My God, John Hope in the chat. Look at this. We got a super chat already from John.
What the hell?
Wishing a fantastic 2026 to all of TRN. It's about 2 a.m. over there.
Yeah, John, it's way too late, man. Go to bed, dude.
I love it. I love it.
No, listen to us. It's well worth losing your sleep over. And I see a wild yes, Ryan Huffman. I haven't seen him in like months.
Yeah, he's in the chat as well. I thought about this going into the show, since it was kind of our eve of New Year's Eve show, I guess you could call it. It's like, what if I set a super chat goal, and if we hit it, I'll like chug a beer live on air or something. And I was like, what would be a good level to do that? I figured like 25 or 30 bucks, because we don't usually get a ton of super chats, but
I'll chug a beer with you.
I'll start drinking if it gets to 8.
Okay. If we hit $25 in super chats, we'll chug a beer live on air. No, let's set the goal right now. $25. That's it. We'll chug a beer on air. But yeah, good to see all the people in the chat. Man, let's talk a little World's End. You know, it's been 2 days since the show, and, you know, we didn't do the traditional post show because I wasn't here. You guys had some scheduling issues, but we've all watched it by now. Give me your grade, A through F, Justin, for AEW World's End.
Well, first off, for me, it technically would be an incomplete, because I still have two matches I need to watch, because I started it really late because I had family in town for the weekend for Christmas number 4 for us. So I started it really late. I had to watch the first two C2 matches, and then I jumped to the end, and I really haven't got a little bit of the middle. But in my defense, I've also not really read anything that makes me really inclined to go check out the middle of the pay-per-view. So I'm somewhere in the B minus to C plus range. You know, I'm at the point where I don't really watch WWE anymore. And so I'm grading AEW pay-per-views against AEW pay-per-views. And I think this was one of the weaker ones of the year. It was very eventful, obviously, for everything that came out of it. But when you talk the match quality that we normally see at AEW pay-per-views, this felt a little less than. We did have an absolute banger in the Mox and Kyle Fletcher match. That was the thing. Like, normally with the AEW pay-per-views, you get like two or three matches in the 4-star and above range. And I feel like there was just one on this show, but everything else hovered right around 3, if not a little bit above. I honestly agree with Ryan's star ratings that he posted. I have mixed feelings about the two big winners, Mox and MJF. I think we're really going to have to talk about MJF, because I was stunned at kind of some of the backlash I saw. I didn't realize how down people are on him. I am not there, but I'm also not really intrigued at the moment with a MJF title reign. That is kind of to be determined. I'm open to it. And then the Mox thing, it just felt way too rushed with, you know, the babyface promo at the end. That felt a little unearned with how his character has been for the last few months. And I'm not saying that they couldn't have gotten there. And I'm not saying it was bad. I thought the promo was fucking badass. And, you know, that is who Mox is. I mean, he is the ace of this promotion. But it just felt a little unearned to me. And I'm not convinced he was the right guy to win the C2.
Okay. Fair enough. Jesse, what about you?
I have seen everyone but one match. I missed FTR and the Bang Bang Gang. I caught the last two matches live. I rewatched Mox Fletcher before we got on tonight. I was going to try to rewatch Hayter and Statlander before we got on tonight. I'm giving this a B. I think just a lot of the same reasons. The quality of it, I think, overall was good. Not quite great, but yeah, Mox and Fletcher. Mox losing a tooth. Yeah. The hard way, in just seeing some of the stuff, like, he put on an incredible performance, I think. And yeah, I wanted to bring this up. I'll wait till later to bring up like what John Moxley has done since he's lost his AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Cause for those who thought he was having a shitty year, you could almost, but not quite, make an argument for him as Wrestler of the Year.
Yeah. If his first 4 months hadn't have started out so poorly, especially with the Copeland feud. I'm 100% there with you, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we had that. Okada Takeshita was a little disappointing to me. I was even more disappointed when I just saw a fan cam video of the end of the match. Just made it a lot worse for me. Outside of that, though, yeah, let's get into that too. The whole Samoa Joe, MJF, all that stuff. Because I think I'm one of the few that was very pro Hangman should still be champion right now. And I didn't feel Samoa Joe should have taken it from him. So just a lot of unanswered questions. But I do think, in AEW's defense, that a heel right now is best suited as a world champion, because look at all those baby faces getting ready to chase him.
Yeah, that was kind of where I was at with it too. First, I'll give my grade. I'm pretty much right where you guys are on it. I'll go B plus just because I was there.
Yeah.
but otherwise, if I was watching on pay-per-view, I'd say B too. You know, like, it was a solid show. I have been with you guys to some unbelievable AEW pay-per-views in the past. I mean, in that very arena, All Out 21, 22, you know, with Jesse, you know, Full Gear up in Minneapolis, Dynasty, of course, down in St. Louis, you know, the United Center for All Out. I mean, just lots of AEW shows. Of all of those pay-per-views, I mean, it's probably at the bottom, but the bottom ranking against those shows is like, that's a tall task to outdo those.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, to Justin's point, Fletcher and Moxley was the best match on the show. I think in my ratings over on Patreon, I gave it 4.25. I mean, just, that was a phenomenal match. I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the finals as well. And I liked the main event too. It wasn't like your typical AEW main event level. It was a little below that. I think I went 3.75 on it. But I mean, it was a solid match, and it was My kids were freaking psyched to see those guys all in the ring together. And I will tell you, before the main event started, they were getting a little tired. And even my middle child, who's usually the night owl, was like, I'm getting tired here. And I'm like, hang on, we're almost to the main event. They were kind of checked out during the C2 finals. But when that main event started, when Swerve came out in particular, I mean, they were losing it. It was, you know, they were really into it. So, for, you know, all the talk, we always talk about the lengths of these shows. Even live, they're too long. I mean, I'm not breaking down any walls by saying that. But yeah, I do think they need to tighten them up. It's a long time to sit in an arena. We were sitting right like the first section off the entrance. And so the pyro was super loud there. We were right under the speaker stack, and I am telling you that music was so loud where we were sitting, it was shaking my clothes. And the loudest theme all night was MJF's. The bass on that theme was insane. It was louder than Swerve's. When MJF came out, I looked down. The bass was literally moving my jeans. It's insane how loud it was.
MJF makes your dick shake, huh, Ryan?
Yeah. Dude, I was very happy my kids had like the sound headphones on because it was so loud. I did not. My ears were not ringing the next day, luckily. But yeah, it was very, very loud. That kept you awake. But yeah, I mean, it was a long night. Worth it in the end. I'll go B+ since I was there. Let's talk about the headline, MJF recapturing the world title. So I wasn't stunned that he won the title. I thought there was a pretty good chance that they would switch the title here, and if they did, I figured it would be MJF, which they did. And I agree with what Jesse said a second ago. I think that the company is way more suited to have a heel world champion right now because of how loaded they are on the babyface side. We've talked about this so much over on the WWE side of things, where, you know, Cody as a babyface champion hasn't had a great long-term feud. He's had some good short-term feuds for sure, but not like a great long-term feud most of the time while he's been champion. And that's been a detriment to him. And I think that that's fairly common in wrestling history. When you look at the history of the industry, a lot of the best champions were heels with babyfaces chasing them. Right. So I made a video for Bleacher Report yesterday where I talked about this, but like Ric Flair in the 1980s, heel champion, all the faces chasing him, right? The Rock, you know, in the late 90s, you know, obviously Hollywood Hulk Hogan, even Steve Austin never really had a long title run. You know, when he would get the title, they would always be brief. It tends to be over time. Like Hogan's obviously the exception in the 80s. But usually when these guys chase and then they get the title, then there's just inevitably this kind of letdown, and they're, you know, it looks like people are better chasing. Hangman's chase was outstanding. He had the title here for several months before he lost it to Samoa. Well, not several months. I guess it was like 3 or 4 months. Yeah, for a little while. I think the one issue you could have with it is, what was the purpose in dropping it to Joe? He could have just dropped it to MJF, and was it really worth having Joe as this kind of transitionary champion just to move it to another heel? I think that that's a worthy debate, but I think when you look at, all right, now you could do feuds with Hangman, you could do feuds with Swerve, you could do a feud with Kenny Omega, who I'm hearing is going to be in the world title picture again here before too long, and then, oh yeah, Will Ospreay coming back next summer. You know, as long as this title run for MJF doesn't lose steam over the next 6 months or so, I'd keep it on him all the way up until All In at Wembley, and I'd have MJF drop it to Ospreay at All In. That's what I would do. But I think even with AEW, when you look at the history of this promotion, a lot of their most memorable times were with heels on top. Omega's super long run as a heel on top until he eventually dropped it to Hangman. Right. Moxley's run, you know, this year we bashed it at the beginning of the year, but then as the year dragged on, they started recovering and it started to become more interesting. Even at the very beginning, Jericho dropping it to Moxley at Revolution 2020. These are all scenarios where you had a heel world champion dropping it ultimately to a babyface after several months. So from that perspective, I don't mind it. And Max is awesome. Now the crowd did cheer him. Live. I mean, it was a split reaction, but people were cheering him. He's good enough, though, that I think that even when he gets those cheers in the arena, if you give him microphone time, he can turn the whole crowd against him anyways. But he's so good that he's like one of those heels people want to cheer. He's just also so good that then he can get those people to ultimately boo him, which some people can't do. So, yeah, I was a fan of it. I don't have any problems with it. Justin, give me your take.
I'm right there with you, man. I have no problem with him kind of hot-shotting the title around, to your point, because they have had a lot of long title reigns. And, you know, that's not necessarily something you need to establish somebody as a top guy, i.e. Hangman. I don't know. Again, I think I was just so taken aback at some of the online reaction I saw to MJF. Like, he's like, even people I know who love AEW, like, are just not into him at all. So that is a little odd to me and worrying. Like, I don't want them to lose all the steam that they've gathered, you know, here at the last half of 2025, because they're just on a roll. Now, having said that, I like the historical point that MJF pointed out, that he is, what was it, like, he's either the 9th or 10th person ever under 30 to be a 2-time world champion. And he listed all the guys, and that's one hell of a fucking list. Mm-hmm. So I like that part of it. And, you know, and it's kind of the same thing. Like, even if this feels a little rushed getting it to MJF, you know, I talked about this early last year with Okada, you know, him winning the C2. It's like, you got to take into account the fact that Tony's probably paying these guys a lot of money. So he wants to do something big with them. He wants to get his money's worth. So MJF should be at the top of the card. He's proven before he can wrestle main event matches. Now, he's going to need Tony to rein in some of the, you know, the more devilish aspects of his wants and needs as a professional wrestler main eventer. He, if left to his, you know, desires, it can get bad, as we saw at the end of his last title reign. But no, I'm all for it, man. Like, there's a lot of great baby faces. I'm very intrigued at the possibility of Omega. I mean, Omega and Ospreay at All In would be pretty incredible. But no, it's like I kind of said at the very beginning, this is a to be determined. Like, I think if anybody can make this work, it's, you know, it's Tony Khan and MJF.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, the one other thing, you mentioned about why couldn't they have just had Hangman drop the title to MJF. I like this way, using Samoa Joe, because MJF still hasn't beaten Hangman. Hangman has those two big wins over him this year, and they can use that for a big match down the road.
Yeah, good point. Absolutely good point. Jesse?
Circle it back. MJF beat Samoa Joe at World's End 2 years yep. earlier. Samoa mm-hmm. Joe beat MJF at World's End to end the 406-day reign. I'm really now trying to soak in Ryan's point earlier about babyfaces being short-term champions for the most part outside of Hogan, and things start to get stale. And you mentioned Cody Rhodes. He had it for over a year, and his reign was just left to be desired. So that could be completely squashing the point that I was trying to make with Hangman Page, where I would have loved for him to have like a 9-month reign, because he finally worked his ass off to get to this point. He is the franchise of the company. And what you're looking at now is, I don't think he's getting that world title back in 2026. So that lead up all the way to that big moment, and he only held it for 4 months, like, what does that drop his stock in some people's eyes as a main character, when they're probably waiting for, I see the name in the chat, and nobody knows Will Ospreay better than I do, at least in terms of, I think, people in this lexicon. If he's healthy, he's probably going to be the one to hunt it down. I mean, there's Swerve, there's Hangman, there's Ospreay. You mentioned Omega. I think he's a good opponent. Not a guy that I want right now at this point of his career to be a world champion again, because he's part-time, battling health stuff. He's a special attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And with MJF, yeah, gosh, Justin nailed it. 2 times, under 30. I think, like, Ric Flair's on that list. Yeah. one of the Briscoes. There's a handful of others. You're just they're eye popping. It's like a who's who. He can go down as a legend. And there isn't that type of character like an Adam Cole or a Roderick Strong that's going to steer MJF off course with something that's too sports entertainment ish. I think a lot of these stories here in 2026 are going to be pretty serious, especially since we haven't seen an MJF swerve at all on this level in AEW. And I think that's something that should get a lot of fans excited. Like when it happens, it's going to be fantastic because they've been playing some parts here and there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's so many questions that are unanswered. There's just, jury, just wait and see.
Yeah, I'm not sure who would all be on that list for the under 30s. I mean, like, obviously people like Brock,
yep,
and The Rock for
Orton
sure.
Orton was mentioned. I think that makes sense.
I'm trying to find that tweet and Flair have Twitter, so it makes it a little difficult.
I think Flair was in his 30s when he won it the first time.
I can dig it up while you're doing it.
Because Flair started wrestling a little bit later. Because I think he first won the title in like 82 or 81. So I think he was in his early 30s. But I mean, there's been quite a few, but like the stat of multiple times under 30, that's kind of interesting. And I was looking up Steve Austin's longest title reign was 175 days. So like just short of 6 months out of his 6 world title run. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of the norm in pro wrestling. Now, I mean, you could make the argument too. Well, if you want a heel champion, Joe could have done the same thing. But I think the issue there, and we all love Samoa Joe going back 20 years,
yes,
you know, but MJF just has more crossover appeal at this stage in his career. He was just, you know, in the Happy Gilmore sequel. And, you know, he's a guy that has crossover appeal. So as you're wanting to broaden your audience, he makes sense if you're going to have a heel champion right now.
This list is bananas. It's like way better than I imagined.
Yeah. Okay.
Lou Thesz.
Okay. Yeah.
Ricky Dozan.
Mm-hmm.
Shinsuke Nakamura. Kazuchika Okada. Here's the oddball, kind of, sort of, Yokozuna.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, for that short time that he was there, he made an impact. And I mean, it's a different type of era back then. The Rock, Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton, and John Cena.
Mm, yeah, there you go.
That's a fucking pretty mega list there. Especially, yeah. I mean, and that's why, because, you know, Tony's, you know, big on wrestling history, and MJF turns 30 in March, I believe. So like, if you're going to kind of shoot for that, do it now. If you want to get, you know, MJF's name amongst those other ones.
Yeah. Speaking of real quick, I'm not getting paid to plug this, but I look forward to it every year. Tony Khan just did this interview with Q101 in Chicago. He does it with Case Lowe, who writes for Voices of Wrestling. My favorite TK interview of the year. Every time he interviews him, just like Tony and him like geek out on wrestling history. I just watched it tonight. You guys should check that out if you haven't seen it. It's a phenomenal watch. It's a little over an hour, like hour and 10 minutes, something like that.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Look at the short term, Bandido in 2 weeks. I would not mind, just for a quick short term program. We mentioned this 3 years ago. We want Eddie Kingston back up there to take on MJF.
Yeah. I mean, as a short term thing, I like it. I mean, we all love Eddie. So
tremendous promo battles between those two.
There's just a lot more options, you know, for feuds. Because yeah, if you have it on, Hangman, where does he go? That's the problem.
Especially with Mox seemingly being a babyface now. That's just one more name to add to that side.
Let's talk about that. Okay, so that was odd. I was a little surprised by it. Also, just like, I haven't really seen a babyface response to Moxley coming at all. Have you guys? Like, I haven't really noticed a groundswell of that happening. It was just like random.
It was that last promo he cut after the C2 ended. Where he talked about how much the tournament meant and how much it meant for him to try and win it. And then all of a sudden everybody online is like, oh shit, fucking Mox is winning this thing. But that is all I saw. But even he was getting babyface pops in the first match against Fletcher.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The crowd was cheering him big time. And it was really interesting because I was watching Brian during all of that. You know, it's like, here's the guy sitting ringside who this man basically attempted murder on a little bit over a year ago. How does he feel about this response? You know, in kayfabe, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brian had just like a serious look on his face the whole time. He never like, I haven't watched the show back on TV, but he didn't appear to be like cheering Moxley at all. He just looked like very serious throughout the whole thing when the crowd was cheering Moxley, and especially in the promo afterwards.
But was some praise for Mox on commentary from Brian.
Okay.
Like the entire thing to me was just weird and didn't fit with the narrative for the past, you know, 12 months.
Yeah, I was curious if the commentary would have sold it as like, oh, Chicago fans are kind of bizarro sometimes. And not
they did.
WWE too much. Yeah. But it was odd. But like, I mean, some of that was the matchmaking too, because he had him in there with Fletcher.
Yeah.
And Okada, two heels.
Yeah. So like,
Don Callis.
It was like, all right, he's going to be our guy, I guess. But yeah, man, I was surprised. I thought Fletcher was going to beat him. So when Mox won that match, I was like, oh, okay. I guess we're not getting the Callis family here in the main event. But I mean, I was not surprised that Okada won over Takeshita. But I kind of figured it was going to be Fletcher and Okada. So when Moxley won, it kind of threw a wrench in the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, like then Mox is cutting that promo after he won it. And, you know, I'm watching the rest of the Death Riders. Like, are they going to jump him, or is there going to be a turn coming here? But like, I think that long term, that's probably where they go. Mm-hmm. But it was very bizarre.
I don't know, man. I think, you know, we've all been kind of waiting for that, you know, for the Death Riders to explode. But I think it might just be as simple as Pac leaving. And then that's it. Like Pac feuding with the Death Riders, and you keep the rest of them basically babyface. Cause I mean, everybody that was in that ring, not Pac, looked pretty fucking excited for Mox winning there, which, and again, like it just wouldn't make sense. Like their leader just won the fucking C2. Why would they like betray him now, you know, other than him kind of turning into a babyface, obviously.
The only wrench in that would be like Wheeler to get people to cheer Wheeler, because the crowd fucking hates Wheeler Yuta. I mean, the chants of fuck you, Yuta are so loud. You know, I could see the crowd getting behind Marina for sure. I mean, she's a badass, but Wheeler might be a little harder to get the crowd behind him.
Do you know what would be kind of cool? If like they did a split, Pac splits off, maybe Yuta joins him, and they do like a red and white Death Riders and a black and red Death Riders, like a Death Riders wolf pack.
Oh no. I saw that somewhere.
Did you?
Oh
no, not for the Death Riders, but I saw it somewhere else on some other thing that people were commenting. Oh, it was with the Don Callis family. Somebody was trying to do that exact same thing, and I just laughed at it. I go, what do you want? Okada, Fletcher, and Takeshita against everybody else? And just watch the black and white, like Horace Hogan or Lance Archer playing the role of Horace Hogan against Takeshita and Fletcher? No, thank you.
You bring back C. Murder to do the theme song? Didn't he do the Wolfpack theme?
Yeah. What about Gabe Kidd in this situation, too? Easy for him to go heel, so you could do like a pack Gabe Kidd Wheeler situation against the rest.
I don't know. It just, the entire thing felt way too rushed to me. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't earned.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely strange in the audience. But again, I guess I wasn't that surprised given the opponents and, you know, Mox being that kind of long-term standard bearer in AEW. So, I mean, they kind of made it happen just by the matchmaking.
Yeah. I guess for me, it's just like, I think the person with the most great matches in the C2 was Kyle Fletcher.
Mm-hmm.
And Okada doesn't really need to win it 2 years in a row. Takeshita is the New Japan world champ. I mean, I would have gone with Fletcher. I think, you know, and again, maybe they were looking for that surprise, like, holy shit. And I do think a part of it is a little bit of a reward from Tony Khan to Mox for being kind of that soldier who shows up every single show, you know, and who's the ace of the company. But man, I just think Fletcher winning to me would have been more interesting. Like, again, kind of the same with MJF. Like, I don't dislike it because I'm open to see what this company will do with Mox as the Continental Champion, but to me, it's just not quite as interesting as if it would have been Fletcher.
Yeah. I mean, that was my prediction. That's where I saw it going. So, I mean, they surprised me, no question about it. I wanted to shout someone out on this podcast because I ran into him at the show and he's probably going to be listening. So right before the show, and we're going to talk about the rest of the matches here in a second, but before I forget, right before the show started, I was walking in my seat and someone like tapped me on the shoulder and they were like, "Hey, are you Ryan?" I was like, "Yeah." And it was Chris Zabel, who's a patron of the show. And I've been in a like an AEW fantasy league with him for a couple of years that he runs.
Sweet.
Aaron Graham, our good friend, introduced me to him and not in person, but like online to do the AEW fantasy league. And he ended up joining. He ended up joining as a patron. I believe he's bought one of our shirts at least two. Super cool guy. Man, he had a sweet T-Wolves starter jacket on, Jesse, that you would have appreciated, nice. Like a retro one. That was very cool. But I wanted to shout that out so I don't forget that. It was cool to see Chris there and run into one of our patrons in person. So that was awesome. Thank you for your continued support, Chris. And it was really cool to see you. I'm going to talk about the women, I guess, a little bit here. I don't really have much on the Chicago Street fight. You know, that match was just kind of there for me.
And to my point at the very beginning of the podcast, that's kind of my issue with the rest of this card is outside of the C2 and the main event, all of the rest just feels like kind of obvious who's going to win filler or meaningless. Like it just, I wasn't buying any of the other titles changing hands because I think they got bigger things coming up.
Yeah.
And so it was just all time killer to me.
For the third year in a row, and it's because of the C2 focus was 85% of your TV the last month. So you had that in the main event. They tried to hotshot Statlander and Hayter, and the rest of it was just filler. So, hey, we don't fault Tony Khan for throwing the C2 at us for the last month because that was that was the best wrestling I've seen in 2025. I do that every year. I don't care. Yeah. But just expect in on the other end of things for 2026's World's End that it probably won't be that good because the focus was on the 12 men that wrestled in that classic.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty uninspired tag team championship match. I'll say that. I wasn't a huge fan. I mean, the match was fine. It just wasn't that exciting. You know, my girls were super excited for that women's match. Babes of Wrath are super over right now. And then, you know, seeing Mercedes and Athena out there together was really cool. That was a good match. It was fun. Crowd was very, very into it. I liked the promo that they cut later to set up Mercedes and Willow this Wednesday night at Dynamite, which I believe our friend in the chat, Tim, is going to be at that show in Omaha. So that's shaping up to be pretty good New Year's Dynamite tomorrow night. And you mentioned Statlander and Jamie Hayter. I really liked that match. I thought that was a fun match.
Go ahead, for me, it'd probably be third four matches of the night for me. Really liked it, but it's just like, I love watching her wrestle, but I have no emotional connection to Statlander. You know, it's just like, she just doesn't feel like as big of a star as, you know, obviously Toni Storm and Mercedes. And I'm not as interested in her as a character like I am Willow or Harley. So it's just like the match was just kind of there.
Yeah. I'll throw it to you, Jesse, in a sec. I would just say, I just have this curiosity factor, like watching Jamie Hayter, because just a couple of years ago, she was one of the most over women on the roster. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of fascinating to watch her trying to like build herself back up to that level. She got a really good response from the crowd. And I think she's always great. It's just a matter of recapturing that momentum. Jesse, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think Jamie Hayter is worthy of it very, very soon. You have to try something. It's almost impossible for anyone to step in the shoes and be the world champion after Toni Storm. And then you have Mercedes Moné, who's basically 1B. Like, those are the two best women from a character and in-ring perspective going. So you have to try something. They've had something with Statlander for the last 5 years. The problem is she's been injured every here and there. You're right. Tremendous in-ring stuff. Just the character's not connecting. So you move to 2026. I think the person I'm looking at, we could be forecasting this later, is if she develops a character too, I totally see Megan Bain being the AEW World Women's Champion in 2026.
She's working her ass off. Yeah. I mean, she's working all over the place. Yeah, I think she's tremendous as well. I will say this for Statlander, outstanding theme song. I mean, that song just is a banger in person. It's just, it's great stuff. I had it in my head all night long after hearing it. Just awesome song. But yeah.
Is it the same one that she used with Stokely, or is it a different one?
She debuted it the night she won the title.
Okay.
Yeah. That was kind of our first sign that they might have big things ahead for her because she's got a new theme. But yeah, I mean, I don't think the result was surprising. There was that crazy spot out of the corner that we've seen, you know, the people online that want
to... Shinoku driver?
Yeah, that people want to bash about being unsafe. But I thought she cradled her head. You know, it was looked brutal in person.
That didn't look bad at all, especially compared to the Mox and Fletcher spot.
Yeah, I've just seen it all over Twitter. And it's just I mean, it looked bad, like, but it was safe.
On Twitter.
It was safe. In person, I couldn't see how close her head, you know, if it turned or not. It looked crazy in person. But, you know, that was a cool spot. Michinoku driver off the top rope. But yeah, otherwise, not surprised at all by the result there. So.
I want to go back to real fast, just to Mox Fletcher. I talked about the tooth lost earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe how that happened?
I don't even know how it happened.
Holy
Tell me.
Crap. So if you want to try, Justin?
No, I was just, when you watch it, it looks like nothing happens.
Yeah. It was the spot where Fletcher had Mox's leg trapped in the steel guardrail. He kicked it. Mox got out of it somehow, and then he just went for a simple, like a tap like this. Mox hit his mouth right on there. Tooth went flying.
Oh, okay.
He held his mouth for like 3 seconds. Everybody thought he was selling it. Then he gets in the ring. You could see blood. Mm-hmm. And then he starts looking like a hockey player. So, I mean, shout out to Moxley. Yeah,
people were talking about it in the crowd. I didn't see where it happened, you know, obviously being there, and I haven't watched it back, but, people in the crowd were like, oh my God, did he lose a tooth? And then I was pointing out to the girls on the video screen that, yeah, you know,
thumbtacks, spiked bats, barbed wire, forks. I mean, this guy's been indestructible except for a simple little slam to some steel steps and knocks out chips a tooth.
Hey man, as someone who once knocked out his two front teeth on his bike, I can empathize with him. Crazy stuff happens, man. Crazy stuff. Yeah, but no, that's the match of the night. For sure. Mixed Nuts Mayhem. All right. I wanted to make a point about this because it was a super fun match. So Tony mentioned in that interview with the Chicago radio station I was talking about here a little bit ago that the spot with Tony dancing with Orange Cassidy, TK said that was his dad's favorite moment of the night. His dad was there watching the show. And stuff like that makes him realize that, you know, not every wrestling fan is the same and they don't all go there for the same thing. And you've got to kind of cater to everybody, you know, a little bit. And he also talked about how he books Dynamite as more of a show that will draw in more of a wider ranging audience, whereas Collision is like for the hardcore wrestling fans. And he also made the point that said, you know, if you're really following AEW, Collision is not a skippable show. You have to watch it to really understand what's happening in the company. But that is his wrestling forward show. And he talked about, you know, again, like he called back to, I don't want to spoil the whole interview because you guys should really check it out. But he talked about how he went to this ECW show with his dad back in the mid-90s. His dad took him to it when he was like 13 or something like that. And how like his dad's favorite thing was the Sandman's entrance. And, you know, he was there, you know, to see the work rate guys. And, you know, that made him know from a young period in his fandom that, like, that's the great thing about pro wrestling. Everybody likes something a little bit different. Again, this is from his interview with Q101 in Chicago. You guys can check that out. So he said his dad really liked the dance spot with Orange Cassidy and Tony Storm. And I've seen people, like, putting that video out there on Twitter and all the places, like, oh, what a joke this is. The same people who loved the Yeet second entrance during War Games. The same freaking people. Now, what you have to keep in mind is context matters, because we came on here and we bashed that. I think it was on the show. I can never think. Either on Bleacher Report or here. And that's because War Games is inherently a violent match. So for everyone to stop in the middle of the match and to start yeeting was stupid. This was a goofy mixed tag match where, like, doing that doesn't matter. It doesn't take away from the premise of the match.
And it was, it falls in line with the two people in their characters.
Yeah.
Of course, Orange and Tony are going to do something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's called exactly. The Mixed Nuts Tag Match the for a reason.
Nuts Mayhem. Yeah. I mean,
it's not like fucking Hangman and Swerve.
Was it a phenomenal work rate match? No, it wasn't supposed to be. But I mean, it was a fun match, man. I liked it. Everybody was into it. The crowd loved the Tony Storm Orange Cassidy spot. And that's really all that matters. In the end, and not just the crowd, but the people watching on TV, I assume didn't think it was stupid. You know, I know, again, at Survivor Series, a lot of the people watching were like, what the hell is this in the middle of War Games? But here it's like, yeah, it makes sense in context and it was fine. Whatever.
Yeah. I like not my cup of tea, but I laughed.
Yeah.
For sure. It was great.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm trying to think if there was any other points I wanted to make just from being there live. I mean, I know it was the biggest crowd they've done at Now Arena. It surpassed All Out 24, had a higher number than that did. I mean, it appeared to be sold out from where I was. There might have been a couple of seats at the very top of the upper deck. It's always hard to tell if people are just out of their seats or not. Pretty much seemed sold out. I mean, we were there. God, Jesse, was that All Out 22 that we went to together? Mm-hmm. And I mean, man, that was a packed crowd too. I don't know
about
which
9,000 that night.
Yeah, this was about 9,000. I mean, it was basically a capacity crowd. Merch line was insane. I did stand in line, you know, with my kids to get them something. But man, the merch line was crazy. I will say, as an arena, because they're similar sizes, I've said this on the show before. In Chicago, if you want to run that size on arena, like about a 10,000 seat arena, I do think Wintrust is a much better arena. It's downtown. Selfishly, though, for this trip, when I wanted to get back quickly, and this is an hour outside of downtown, if you've never been to Hoffman Estates, Illinois, this worked out better for me because I needed to get back early in the morning the next day going west. But yeah, I mean, as a venue, Wintrust is nicer. It's newer. There's more to do around there. That being said, there's a lot of history in this arena for this company. And so it's always fun to go to the Now Arena. You guys have any other thoughts before we move on to our wrestling awards talk here for the last, I don't know, 20 to 30 minutes?
I don't. I'm good, man.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
All right. So, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about this. We had the Sports Illustrated Awards, which got everybody talking. My old workplace, by the way, I want to talk a little bit about that because I have some insight on how that all works over there. You know, we're going to have the Observer Awards. You know, all the outlets are doing this, podcasts are doing it. We've done full shows on wrestling awards in the past year. I put out for our patrons. I went through because if you're not a patron, again, best way to support our show, link in the description. But I grade all the pay-per-views, WWE and AEW. So I went back yesterday and I pulled all of the matches that I scored 4.5 or above, which actually was exactly 10 matches this year. So that worked out perfectly. 8 were AEW matches. 2 were WWE matches. You know, I can look at that list and, you know, without having to revisit them because I scored them in the moment, kind of pull what I think were the matches of the year, the shows of the year, all of that. And then I can look at which wrestlers, you know, had the most on the men's and women's side make that list. And quite honestly, it came out pretty damn close to what Sports Illustrated came up with for their men's and women's wrestlers of the year, show of the year, all of that. And let me just assure you, I think most of the people listening to this show wouldn't say this. No, Sports Illustrated is not paid by AEW. I worked there. That's not how it works. I loved working there. I mean, the editor I worked for is an awesome guy. Honestly, I stopped writing there just because time constraints with my millions of jobs. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe I'll try to work there again in the future. But it's a great group of people over there. Our friend Zach, you know, we got John Alba's over there doing a lot now. He started right after me there. And it's all on the level, you guys. They're not being paid by AEW. And I don't even understand how people could criticize what those awards are. I mean, we basically would fill out a Google form anonymously and then you would tally it and that's the results. And, you know, I think they came up with Mercedes as their women's wrestler of the year and Hangman as the men's wrestler of the year, if I'm not mistaken.
What was their match of the year? Because that was like the one thing that WWE won, right?
I think it was the women's triple threat?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Good match.
That was in my top 10. It would not be my match of the year, but
women's match of the year.
No, it was not the best women's match of the year. But it was an outstanding match. It was in my top 10 for the year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, personally, my women's wrestler of the year would be Mercedes Moné. I just think top to bottom, working all the different promotions, all the titles, I think she had the best year. Toni Storm as a performer is the best women's wrestler for me right now, at least in North America. But I think Mercedes just had a better year personally. Like I just top to bottom. They were there. It's basically 1A and 1B. I would lean Mercedes just by a little bit, but I could go with either one of them. EO Sky, you know, she was in that triple threat at WrestleMania. She had the surprise title run that people weren't really seeing coming. She had a great year in the ring too. But to me, I mean, I think Tony and Mercedes are on a whole different level than that as far as women's wrestling goes. But I would lean Mercedes. I think she had a hell of a year. What do you guys think for women's wrestler?
I mean, to me, it's Toni Storm by a mile. It's not really even close.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
By a mile? Not even close?
Yeah, not even close for me. She easily had, if not the match of the year, mm-hmm. easily the best women's match of the year. She has pulled off a character that absolutely should not work as a main event character. And she has been able to do it not only in her promos, but in the ring. That shines through. Is just, to me, she had the most impossible task and she fucking knocked it out of the park. Again, the match with Mariah May, fucking mm-hmm. the match with Mercedes Moné at All In was a hoot. She more than any other wrestler, I'm definitely not turning the channel when she's on, just because I don't know what the fuck she's gonna say. Mm-hmm. I know in a match she's gonna work her ass off, and she's gonna work her ass off in her own unique way. Whereas I feel like with all the other elite wrestlers, I kind of usually have a pretty good idea as to what their matches are going to look like. But she is just so unpredictable and fun to me. Absolutely love her.
Yeah, I could be persuaded either way. I wouldn't say by a mile either direction. For me, it's like a toss up. It's really close. Some days I might say Tony. Like Tony had two matches in my top 10. Mercedes just had one, and it was the match they had together at All In. And then Mariah and Tony was my highest scored women's match of the year. I think, yeah, the first half of the year, there's no question. I think Tony was blowing it away. And then I think Mercedes came on late. I could be convinced either way. It's one of those two for sure for me. Go ahead, Jesse.
A simple yet complex question. What is the criteria for a wrestler of the year? That's what I want to know. I'll answer your question.
I think match quality, importance to the show, star power, charisma, drawing power, all of that.
But
go ahead, Justin.
Their butt.
Oh, that's fair. Well, then it's a landslide now, but no. So you got it. No. We don't throw that one in there. If you throw all of that, then it's by a nose. It's Toni Storm for me. For the reasons that Justin mentioned. I think mm-hmm. Mercedes definitely has the better work rate. I feel if you go the full year long, in spite of the fact Tony had the best women's match of the year, and yeah, who in the hell can pull off a character like that? I mean, almost universally, she's loved by wrestling audiences. I think it's 1A, 1B, very, very tough, but by that criteria, by a nose, I go Toni Storm.
Yeah, and I guess to put a point on it for me, it's Mercedes had way more good matches, but Tony had more great matches and more memorable promos up and down the year.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, I only gave two matches this year the full 5 stars, and it was Mariah and Tony, which I still think is the best women's storyline ever. in pro wrestling. So maybe that, I might be rethinking this. Maybe that should put Tony over the top for me. Again, it's so close because a couple of days ago I was leaning Tony, and then I was like, man, Mercedes had a hell of a run this year. She's doing the Ultimo Monet stuff and all the titles and working all over the world and stuff. So then I started to give the edge to her, but man, it was early in the year, but and that feud went back into last year. So you kind of got to factor that in a little bit, but man, that was it. I said it on our review. You guys can go in the archives. It wasn't like the best work rate match of all time, but it was like absolutely perfect for what it should have been.
Yep.
Given the story they told, the way it ended, everything along the way, it was like one of the most perfect women's matches I've ever seen.
Spoiler alert out there in TRN Unplugged land, as I do these 52 matches next year, the only 2025 match I'm doing is Mariah May versus Toni Storm.
Just phenomenal stuff. And the other five-star match for me was Hangman and Moxley at All In. I gave that one 5 stars. But man, you look at that Revolution card, that show was unreal. And the fact that those three matches, by the way, happened in sequence with Mariah and Tony, Takeshita and Omega, and Ospreay and Fletcher in that steel cage match. All three of those matches were in my top 10 scored of the year, and they were all in the same show in sequence. That's just crazy. Like, to me, Revolution is the best show of the year just because of that. Like, that's my show of the year. Three of the top 10 matches on the same show.
Man, if Mox and Cope could have just had even a fucking
and then that was the main event, the ultimate comedown. But man, dude, that was just an absolutely crazy show. I mean, Hangman and Ospreay at Double or Nothing, I was like 4.5 on that. That was a freaking awesome match too. That's in my top 10. Man, if Ospreay didn't get injured, you know, I mean, he might've been in this conversation for men's wrestler of the year. Let's get to our men's wrestler of the year. I said it, to me, it's Hangman Page.
Yep.
He was the most captivating all year, had the best story.
Yep.
One of the premier guys in AEW. He had 3 matches in my top 10 for the year, which was more than anybody else. Ospreay had 2, Tony had 2, Fletcher had 2, Hangman had 3. So outstanding matches, importance to the company, storyline. Just hell, man, like that promo he did at Dynamite down in Mexico City. It was like one of the most memorable promos of the year, too. To me, Hangman Page is the men's wrestler of the year, and it sounds like you agree, Justin.
Fuck yeah. I mean... It to me, it's just like 2025 will be, you know, it's just all about him and Toni Storm. Like, that's what it is. And, you know, Jesse, at the beginning of the pod, you were talking about how you wish Hangman had had a longer run with the title to really establish him. But it's like, even more than winning the title, that feud and that win in that short reign established him as a capital G guy. Like, he is a true blue main eventer. So he doesn't really need the title in order to carry himself like that anymore. That's not an easy thing to do. You know, for a long time, we thought, you know, it was going to be Darby in that spot for All In. But, you know, luckily they got to the right guy and he knocked it out of the park. What, Ryan, what was the third match with Hangman? Hangman... Mox, Hangman, Ospreay.
Hangman, Fletcher at All Out.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, beginning to end all year, Hangman, just like Tony, can do it in the ring and can do it on the mic, all in character. It all makes sense. Just chef's kiss of a year for Hangman Adam Page.
Bold, not so bold prediction. Your 2026 Wrestler of the Year is going to be Kyle Fletcher. 2025, it was Hangman Page for all the reasons you guys have listed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think he kind of ran away with it. To me, there's not a 1A, 1B on the men's side. It's just, he had just an unbelievable year. I mean, do you want to talk about promotion of the year? CMLL? I know you're leaning WWE.
CMLL?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there CMLL had a good year. Yeah. I should mention when we're talking about this, it's North American focused. you know, we watch New Japan a little bit. Jesse watches it the most. I'm going to be tuned in for Wrestle Kingdom for sure, yep, coming up this weekend. But, you know, like if you really want good New Japan coverage, go listen to Jeremy Finestone's,
yes,
podcast. That's where you should get your New Japan podcast content. I mean, he does a phenomenal job over it. I'm not factoring in that in my top matches here. We're talking North American wrestling, more United States wrestling, I should say. Where, I mean, we're not talking really Mexico too much. Don't watch a lot of CMLL. I wish I had more time to. But no, man, I mean, when you look at WWE, AEW, and I mean, New Japan's not going to be promotion of the year this year. It's, to me, it's AEW. They've had an unreal year creatively. You know, you'll get your corporate stands on Twitter and wherever, threads, talking about, oh, what are you talking about? WWE made the most money. I mean, who the hell grades wrestling on who makes the most money? Like, what kind of fan are you that's what you're grading on? Like, I said, I had responded on our Twitter account to somebody who was talking about that the other day. And it was like, do you believe that the Oscars should be decided by box office? Because that's what you're saying. So then you just give best picture every year to whichever picture made the most money. That's not how it works in like any art form. That's, mm-hmm, not how it works. It's who creatively had the best year. And dude, we have been at times high on WWE, especially Jesse and I. They did not have a good year. Hunter's booking was not good this year. And now we find out that a couple of years ago, Vince was still booking the fucking show, just like we said he probably was. That has now come out thanks to some work that WrestleNomics did. So Vince was still around during the time when people were giving Triple H his flowers. This year, Triple H, no, he didn't cut it. AEW had an awesome year, pretty much top to bottom. I mean, if you are a hardcore wrestling fan, I don't know how you're not into this program right now. I just don't. I don't understand it. There, if you are a longtime fan going back as many years as we are to the 1980s, this is what we want out of a wrestling promotion. And, you know, they've had downturns at times over the years. This year was not one of them. Creatively, top to bottom, one of their best television years of all time in their short history.
It has had its flaws this year in 2025. No promotion's perfect. However, I think in terms of how, as Ryan said, a professional wrestling promotion should be constructed, the answer is All Elite Wrestling. I think Ryan made a point earlier about Shad and Tony Khan being in the ECW arena, and Tony was fascinated by the wrestling, but it was still took to tune with the theatrics of it all. So I feel that you get the entire buffet with All Elite Wrestling. They give you the wrestling. That, mm-hmm, is the most important part at the end of the day. It's the wrestling. So, but you don't really get that anywhere else.
But they do the stories too. And that's that's the most ridiculous argument you'll see online is that, oh, they just do wrestling. No, yeah, they give you the best wrestling in the ring.
Yeah.
But, and especially talking about 2025, they by far gave you the best stories to go along with the best wrestling. I can't imagine not watching AEW if you care at all about professional wrestling.
Do you know what the equivalent of that is, Justin, to bring this full circle to the beginning of this podcast? The equivalent is the people who comment on like football or basketball that are clearly stat watchers that don't watch the games. And they say stuff like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, well, his EPA is this and, you know, whatever shit. Like, have you watched the games? You know, like if you actually, these people are like, oh, maybe I'll go to cage match. Oh, look at all these 4-star matches or whatever. But man, was there any stories there? I never heard any about that. But they're not actually like watching the shows. AEW tells some of the most intricate stories of any promotion. They call back to stuff that happened years ago and they don't punish you for it like WWE does, mm-hmm, who wants you to forget stuff that happens. You guys talked about like the history of Samoa Joe and MJF at World's End at the beginning. I'm sure that factored into the booking decisions.
Yep.
You know, versus WWE, they want you to forget stuff, and the stuff they want you to remember, they will beat you over the head with, you know, and they will try to suppress any other memories you have. This is a promotion that tells the most sophisticated stories, I would argue. And goddamn, look at that Mariah May Tony Storm story, one of the best stories of all time. Look at Hangman Page's entire run going back to 2019 and the ups and downs he has had traveling to the title on two different occasions, right? I mean, They definitely tell stories. Anyone that says that is not worth your time listening to. I mean, they think they don't tell stories.
You know, it's rushed, but I think they're telling the right story with Mox. You know, the story's rushed, but it's there. I'm shocked by anybody who can throw that out there, who can spew that kind of bullshit. You're fucking Peter Rosenbergs of the world.
Yeah.
Tony Storm and Mariah May's whole feud and how it culminated. That's the best woman's story ever told. We're looking forward to seeing how the Don Callis family finally breaks up in 2026. Look at that story and how that's been going since the
Mercedes Moné falling apart here at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Who would be your, I think this is probably going to be pretty one-sided, but who would be your breakout performer of 2025? Either of you can go first. Justin.
That's kind of tough. Like, my recency bias honestly wants to say Kevin Knight, just from where he went at the beginning of the year to now. You know, I think the answer is probably Fletcher.
Yeah.
But it felt like he was already on this trajectory before the year started. So, you know, when he got that big win over Ospreay at the end of last year.
Full gear.
Yeah. It felt like he was already heading in that direction or on that level, which is the only reason I wouldn't give it to him. But yeah, I mean, he's probably the answer.
To that point though, when we did that show, I believe the title of the show for Full Gear last year was Kyle Fletcher is a Made Man. And I remember I had people tweet me and commenting like, what are you talking about? He's not a made man just from beating Will Ospreay. Well, what happened in 2025? That match absolutely cemented him as a made man. And I guess to your point, Justin, like people maybe weren't buying it at the time because that's why I got those comments, but then he proved it in 2025. So
I like that argument.
Yeah. For me, it's Fletcher, I think. Jesse.
I'm trying to rack my brain with a contrarian answer. No, I want to give a special shout out. This guy broke out a long ass time ago. Ricochet, the AEW national champion.
Like that.
And the heel work that he's done in 2025, like kudos to that man for reinventing his career. You want to the reinventing their character of the year award, Ricochet? I mean, outside of that, yeah, Fletcher for sure.
Yeah, Ricochet's been awesome since he jumped. Yeah.
If just out of morbid curiosity, because I don't fucking watch that
one,
that crap. But who would your breakout star of WWE be?
I think Huffman nailed it. Stephanie Vaquer.
I mean, Breaker's had a pretty good year too, but yeah, I'd probably lean Stephanie Vaquer.
Yeah, she's been tremendous over on the Raw side of things. Because we've been talking about all year, all of those 40 somethings that are still at the top of the card, like who's bound to like break through and become something, and Braun just seems to be it.
To John's point, so I wouldn't call Harley the breakout performer. I'd say she's most improved, though. Like, she's the most improved from where she was a year ago, I think, on the AEW side, for sure. I mean, she's come a long way since. God, Tim and I went to Dynamite a couple of years ago at the Wind Trust, and that was when she was just... She did the promo that night with the Acclaimed, where Bowens was like, I'm gay. What are you talking about? I'm not looking at you or whatever. That was that show. I mean, she was doing like the obnoxious singing and all. Like, look how far she's come from that. She's wrestling now and a tag team champion. I mean, that's a crazy turnaround.
I'll give a very high honorable mention to Bandido for breakout performer of the year as well.
That was one I thought of too. Like, he's been on this level, but he feels like breakout just because of the spotlight he's been given. You know, he's been a fucking incredible wrestler for a while now, but man, yeah, it does feel like he leveled up this year. Great call. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where I'd go. 1B.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Show of the year. I said Revolution for me. Do you guys have answers on that?
I mean, it's tough to match that 3-match run that you talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But the most fun I had all year was All In. Like, the top to bottom, that was probably not the best show, but there were still a lot of great matches, and it felt huge and it felt important, and it kicked WWE in the nuts a little bit, which, you know, I got to give a little bit extra bonus points to. So yeah, for me, it's all in.
You mean you weren't super invested in Goldberg's return?
I totally forgot that.
Wasn't that the day of Goldberg's return?
Yes.
Saturday night's main event. Can't even remember.
I wanted to cover that too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had two matches from All In were on my, they were on my top 10. So, I mean, it's, I'm scanning it here again. That was the only other show that had multiple matches in my top 10, 4.5 stars or above. That one was Tony and Mercedes, Hangman and Moxley, a 4.5 and a 5-star match, according to my rankings. Again, personal preference. You might see them differently. And then Revolution with the 3, I had a 5, I had a 4.5, and I had a 4.75 on that show. Both phenomenal shows.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just all in stuck the landing, whereas
they did.
Evolution just dropped a little nugget at the end.
Both with a 5-star match. I mean, my only 2 5-star matches of the year were those two shows.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just kind of a sicko in this aspect. I'm going to go Double or Nothing here.
Oh, okay. Hangman and Ospreay.
Yeah, but Ricochet, Mark Briscoe in the ambulance match.
Ah, good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speedball Bailey and Kazuchika Okada in an unreal continental class or continental championship match. The anarchy in the arena was very fun. We were poo-pooing the hell out of that before it was shown, and we loved it. All four of those matches were close to Revolution. So I just loved the Hangman Ospreay match for kind of the old school feel that it had. It had that Japanese flavor, similar to what I saw from Okada and Moxley the other night. I loved that match, and not many people did.
Yeah, I just pull up my ratings on the Patreon for that show. Hangman Ospreay, 4.5. The matches you mentioned, Anarchy in the Arena, I gave 4.25. Okada and Bailey, I gave 4. I also gave Mercedes and Jamie Hayter 4 on that show. That opened
That's
the show.
Right. Was solid. That was really good.
Yep. Let's see what else is pretty high.
Ricochet.
Where is it? Ricochet Briscoe, 3.75. So yeah, that's a pretty good score.
I'll get a little higher on that one.
I mean, yeah, it's like 4 or 5 matches at the 4-star plus level or close. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a solid one too. Down in Phoenix this year, I believe it was. Yeah. I'd like to see Double or Nothing return to Vegas. I mean, look, selfishly, I just like to have an excuse to go out there for it again. But WWE running Mania out there is making that problematic for sure. I think it'd be fun if they ran Atlantic City. We talked about that last year. And just running the old convention center in Asbury Park where Mania 4 and 5 were. I think that would be a cool location for it too.
All right, next award. What was your favorite 20-minute commercial break during a PLE this year? Is there one that stood out to you? Man.
Cody Rhodes, Minute Maid, directly into WrestleMania 42 ad featuring, you guessed it, Hunter Hearst Helmsley and 5 other dudes. Then there's 6 other people in the celebrities in the audience. That Tony Radcliffe guy, good to see you, buddy. Then we rolled into the women's version of the WrestleMania 42 casino deal in Vegas. Then we went straight to another Paul Levesque promo for about 4 to 5 minutes. Then Michael Cole and Wade Barrett started talking for 1.5 minutes about something. It might have had to do with like tampons or whatever. And then we went into that main event package. That was my answer.
Oh, man, that one sounds awesome.
I was also laughing because I think you're talking about that failed comedian guy, Tony.
Yeah.
Tony Hinchcliffe. But since you called him Tony Radcliffe, I was thinking him as Harry Potter with the big glasses on. Maybe improve his act a little bit. Yeah. God. Yeah. No. The amount of downtime you get between those matches, I would like to see that tightened up in 2026 for sure. You guys can let us know your thoughts on these awards. You can comment on the show on Spotify. You can comment here on YouTube. You can email us. It's been a while since we've got an email. TopRopeNation@gmail.com. If you're a patron, you can comment on the video or audio file here if you'd like. Let us know your thoughts on all of it.
Did we do our match of the year yet?
No, I don't think we did.
I don't think we? Not officially.
We talked about a lot of matches, but yeah, officially say what your match of the year is. Okay. Go ahead, Justin.
I mean, this to me, this is the closest, you know, competition of the awards. neck and neck. But I will give the nod to the one I was just a little bit more emotionally invested in. Texas Death, All In, Hangman Mox. It had a lot of gaga when it comes to an AEW main event match, but it made perfect sense and it was executed perfectly. There was the added bonus. I was watching it with friends and we had a freaking blast and we were jumping around at the end. It was just everything just worked on me with that match. I absolutely fucking loved it. It's, you know, it's one of those, I haven't been that invested in a babyface winning. The only other times would probably be like Brian over Swerve at All In. And then again, Brian over Batista and Orton at WrestleMania 30 are like, those are, it's going to be those three. When I think of like, Jesus, when or Punk Cena at Money in the Bank, like those are the ones I'm going to think of. It's like, God damn, that was huge. That was huge.
Yeah.
I wish I could say Hangman and Ospreay. I can't even go there. I can't.
A couple of our friends in the chat are going with that one. Yeah. I mean, I phenomenal match.
Yeah. And I also agree with the women's triple threat match WrestleMania being near like top 6 to 8 in there. Only because of the visual of Jon Moxley literally looking like he's going to die and having to tap out. That visual will stick with me forever and ever. Might be one of the greatest moments in the history of pro wrestling. Yeah. Hangman Moxley All In by a nose over Tony Storm and Mariah May. Because the way that ended too, with the end in the background, you can't get much better than that.
If that's how Revolution would have ended, chef's kiss.
Then it's show of the year.
Yeah. Which it probably already is, but I mean, that just would have put it over the top.
Yeah, I'll make it a clean sweep. I'll go with All In too. That finish, again, go in the archives and listen to it. But man, that finish was absolutely phenomenal in the way that Mox tapped out and just Hangman's journey to the title and basically rescuing the title back from the Death Riders. Yep. Phenomenal story. 5-star match.
That moment of panic when it looked like Hangman couldn't get the briefcase open because all we wanted to do was see the most beautiful title in all of professional wrestling. Yeah,
and then
he got it open and the emotion on his face. I mean, oh, so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my WWE match of the year is probably the women's match. Although I really like Punk and Gunther at SummerSlam too. Mm-hmm. Those were the two my two highest scored WWE matches of the year were Punk Gunther at SummerSlam and the triple threat at Mania with the women, Belair, Ripley, and Io Sky. I'd probably go with the women's match from Mania. There's been a lot of good wrestling this year. There always is. Yeah. You know, whenever we complain about what a certain company is doing one way or the other, I mean, God dang, there's always great stuff out there.
Yeah, fucking great call, John. Omega Kid. From the very beginning of the year. God damn, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
I made a huge list of matches. There's a bunch of honorable mentions here. One that was on TV with Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher at Grand Slam.
Mm. Yeah.
Along with what we've seen for the C2.
Yeah. Oh, God damn. There's so many good fucking matches in the C2.
Yeah. I mean, I was only factoring in my pay-per-view matches on my list on Patreon because I don't score all the TV, but maybe I should start because maybe in 2026 I'll do that and then just make a spreadsheet because, man, there's been so many good televised matches too that MJF and Mystico, by the way, too, CMLL. I mean, that was another one that was phenomenal.
Oh, Justin, you might want to mention this one before I do. Bandido Takeshita at Ring of Honor.
Oh, fuck yeah. Hell yeah.
Yep. Ryan Huffman says, year from now, who will everyone be talking about?
I said it already.
Yeah, he said Kyle Fletcher already.
Kyle Fletcher.
Whichever TKO executive shits on some poor woman next. My guess.
Oh, God. I think it'll be Bron Breakker on WWE. I think Breaker's going to be world champion. So I think it'll be Bron Breakker probably over there. But yeah, Fletcher, probably Ospreay, the second half of the year coming back and having a phenomenal year again. I think he'll be in that conversation as well. We'll probably at the end of 2026 be having the conversation of, you know, Ospreay missed some time, but holy shit, these last 6 months, you know, like, does that put him in wrestler of the year conversations? I could see that being a talking point for sure.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Hangman and Mox do with the rest of the year, with the role that they're on. Takeshita, you know, I mean, I don't know. There's fucking lot of good wrestlers out there. Swerve.
Right? What a swerve, dude.
Yes, 26. Yes.
Jericho versus Reigns, John Hope says. My God. I love these people online that are making it out like, oh, can you believe Chris Jericho going back to WWE? What a burn for AEW. What are you talking about? They squeezed every bit of juice out of that fruit that they could. Everybody wants him to go back to WWE. Yeah. He should go back to WWE. It's time to do the retirement tour over there, get paid, and retire. Do the Hall of Fame thing. There's nothing for him to do in AEW. These people just, they don't understand the history of wrestling and moving from territory to territory. Like, he needs to be gone. Nobody is like begging for him to stay in AEW. He shouldn't even be in the cards at this
and
point.
Nobody wants Chris Jericho back in WWE more than his wife.
Bingo. I was trying to think of a joke, but you beat me to it.
She might there become the next Erica Kirk at this rate.
Oh no. Yeah. The Jerichos will be happily at home over there in World Wrestling Entertainment. So, God, it's been a fun year of Top Rope Nation. I'd love to hear your guys' top memories of the show over the last year. That would be interesting. You can comment on this. You might have to think about it a little bit. You can comment on this video or the podcast and let us know that. What are your favorite memories of Top Rope Nation over the years?
What was your favorite curse word I said?
Yeah, over the last 12 months, I should say, not over the years. I wanted to point out something here that I spent a little time doing the other night because I feel that not a lot of people know that this is an option for supporting the show. It's a little bit cheaper than Patreon, but you still get benefits. You don't get as many benefits as Patreon, but you get some. And you know, that is, you can get access to a lot of our bonus shows, just the video. So not the podcast version. So maybe it's not as convenient for you, but if you only watch us on YouTube, you know, you might want to consider this. And that is, you can become a TRN Plus member on our YouTube channel. So I'm going to actually share my screen so you can see exactly what I'm talking about. Because I had the TRN archives, I believe, back to 2023, the TRN Classics archives posted on there. Let me share my screen so you can see what I'm talking about. Ryan Huffman says, the time Ryan's kid counted the swearing. Yeah, when my oldest was here in the office when we were doing that Sunday morning show, that was
pretty good. Really good.
That was a good one. I think that was Justin. She was counting your swears, Justin.
No. Doesn't sound like me.
Oh, fuck that.
What I was talking about on YouTube membership, though, we do have some people who are patrons and TRN Plus members on YouTube because they like having the ability to like easily access the TRN Classics video versions without having to go through Patreon. So if you're a patron, you get all the audio synced to your favorite podcasting platform with like a private RSS feed. You get TRN Unplugged, you get TRN Extra, you get TRN Classics, you get all the main feed shows with no ads, $5 a month. That is the number one way to support this show. But if you're looking for another way to support the show, you can become a TRN Plus member, a YouTube member. It's only $2.99 a month. It's like less than a cup of coffee these days. And that will give you, as you can see here, all of these bonus videos. And every single TRN Classics, which I think I can speak for all of us by saying that's like the cream of the crop of what we do here, is when we do these retro shows every month. I mean, you can see like Clash 17 that we just did recently is on there 8 days ago. This has the entire archive of TRN Classics now, like all the way back to 2022. How do I view the whole playlist? Hold on a second here. This is going to get a little wonky. Okay. Yeah. So as I scroll this list, you guys, $2.99 a month gets you all of these shows behind the YouTube paywall. All of this. And so like I had it back to 2023. And the other night I just uploaded all the 2022 classics too. They were there on Patreon, the videos, the video versions, which is what I'm talking about, but you had to like really hunt for them to find them. If you're a YouTube Plus member, I mean, they're right there on the feed. I mean, look, I'm still scrolling here. There's a lot. So I went back to our 2022 classics, which begin right here with Starrcade 97, which we did in December of 2022. Thanksgiving Star Wars, Bad Blood, Anarchy Rules 99, SummerSlam 92, Canadian Stampede 97, Great American Bash 96, Judgment Day 2000, Spring Stampede 94, Mania 3, Chi-Town Rumble 89, and Rumble 92. That was a hell of a year on TRN Classics. Kyle was on every single one of those. That was his last full year with the show. So if you miss Kyle, there you go. Man, those are some awesome, that's some of our best shows of all time. And so again, if you're a patron, you can access that anytime right now. If you're not, and you want to support the show and you want to just get access to the video versions, become a TRN Plus member here on YouTube. It's only $2.99 a month and you get all of these videos. I just wanted to promote that a little bit because I feel like not everyone realizes that's there. And just like the ease of access of those is really cool. I also usually post my BR shows there as TRN extras for the TRN Plus members. So, you know, just another way to support us in the new year. We'd love to have your support. We appreciate all of you who do support us and our patrons and TRN Plus members right now.
I need the Tony Romo sounder for Royal Rumble 92, WrestleMania 3, Canadian Stampede.
I mean, those are just all-timers we did that year, 2022. What show was that? John's mentioning here. I can't remember. Remember, I was like crying laughing on that TRN Classics.
Last one we just did, that was one. Halloween Havoc, the month before, we were laughing about something. Nikolai Volkov.
It was Nikolai Volkov
that we did.
It was the Nikolai Volkov show. God, which one was that?
It's Royal Rumble, I think.
This was like in the last few months. Was it SummerSlam 90?
I think it was SummerSlam, wasn't it?
Oh, that's right, because he was teaming with Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah, it was SummerSlam 90. Okay, if you guys aren't patrons, you didn't hear that show, become a patron for the podcast version or become a YouTube member to get the video. I have never laughed that hard on a show ever. I literally had tears coming down my face. And then Justin was laughing just like that. Nonstop. Jesse was losing it. I mean, this went on for 10 minutes. It was hilarious. That was maybe my favorite show of the year. That was, God, yeah, that was a one. That was a fun one. That was really good stuff. So there you go. Patreon, YouTube, support what we do. Support independent podcasts, you guys. We're not getting pushed by any major websites. You know, we're just doing this on our own, going on year 10 here. If you enjoy it, we'd appreciate your support. It makes it all possible. Yes, indeed. All right, guys, that's it. I think we're going to let you enjoy your New Year's Eve. I hope you enjoyed the show. We kind of put together at the last second, but we wanted to do one more show in 2025. So it's been a landmark year for us. We hit 400 episodes. Yep. Jesse was here along for the ride for his, what is this, your third year? I mean, you started in 2023 in the summer and then all of 24 and 25 with us.
Yeah, wow.
That's crazy. Fun.
Yeah, 2.5 years now with Jesse in the third chair. Kyle returned a couple of times on classics. And plenty more coming at you in 2026.
200th episode of Unplugged very, very soon.
Yes. Any special guests on that one?
I have a couple.
I'll be dropping for patrons by the end of the week. Mm-hmm. So look for that, Patreon supporters. And with that said, you guys, I am going to play us out. Now, this will not be on the YouTube version because I don't want a copyright strike. But on the podcast side, this has become a tradition here on this show. On our New Year's Eve shows, or the ones closest to New Year's Eve, I always play us out with the live version of Auld Lang Syne by Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band from New Year's Eve 1980 at the Nassau Coliseum. So enjoy that, everybody. Have a happy new year, and we'll see you all in 2026. Take care.
Peace.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.